Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Atlanta Business Radio. Stone Payton here with you, broadcasting live over the Business Radio X network. Today's episode is brought to you in part by ARC, American Reaper Graphics Corporation. If you print with it, print on it, or simply want it printed, head on over to arcinatlanta.com. Or better yet, reach out directly to Mindy Godwin. Let her know that the folks over at Business Radio X sent you. You can reach her at 770-394-2465. You're in for a real treat this morning. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Director Business Valuation with Wyndham Brannon, Mr. Tom Brooks. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Stone. How are you?
I am wonderful. We're delighted to have you on the show. Really been looking forward to this conversation, and maybe a great place to start to educate at least me, maybe many of our listeners, this whole body of work, this domain of business valuation. What's it about? How does it serve people?
Right. And it frequently when somebody will ask me what I do, either at a cocktail party or you're out and, you know, you'll get this look. They'll say, well, what do you do? I say, well, I do business valuation. And this glossy look comes over their eyes and they ask a question. Do you do business evaluation? So it's a little confusing to, I would say, not necessarily the layperson to say, but we'll use layperson. That frequently when you say that again, it's going to be, well, what kind of evaluation analysis are you doing on our company? So the way I kind of like to explain it is we typically will actually appraise and value privately held businesses. So if you think about Coca-Cola, GE, Microsoft, those are shares of stock that you can buy and sell at any time. And, you know, in 3 days you have cash, so to speak. Well, with a privately held company, there's no market for those shares of stock or the equity interest in those companies. So we get engaged and you have to hire a specialist like us to come in and then value or appraise a company.
So I can see the value immediately in doing that if we're getting ready to sell or we want to get a handle on, you know, what the company might be worth because some folks are poking around wondering if, you know, maybe they ought to be courting us. Is there some wisdom, I don't know, like an oil change? Like should an enterprise get a business valuation periodically for other reasons?
Well, I think that that's a great point, and I think it's something that I think is definitely should be on any business owner's radar. If you're building your future and kind of your wealth, and especially in more of what we'll call a closely held, maybe family business even, you know, that's probably potentially your most valuable asset that you own. Mm-hmm. You know, you may have some, you know, securities portfolio, you may have, you know, some real estate, but typically the most, small to, you know, mid-market business owners, the real key to their net worth is their business. And frequently they don't know what that is worth. So frequently what I'll say is, you know, again, back to kind of valuation is kind of think of transactions that can necessitate the need for evaluation. So, and you highlighted kind of the most obvious is, you know, I'm thinking about selling or let's get in the, you know, kind of mode of selling. And frequently what happens again, kind of like I just described, a lot of business owners wouldn't know that myself exist or any of our competitors that are business appraisers. So typically what happens is they talk to a trusted advisor like their CPA or, their attorney or a financial planner of some sort. And they'll say, well, what you really need is an appraisal and to kind of figure out what you're worth. And I can honestly say that, and I've been doing this now 25 years, I probably only have a handful of clients, and it's probably, and by that one handful, five or less that, and really I have one that really does valuation for scorecard purposes. He's got a very nice, large, you know, middle market type business, but he uses it. He's very entrepreneurial, very strategic, plans a lot. And for him, it's a key component to what he wants to do to understand as I execute my plans and as I put my plans in place in terms of, you know, and put it down on paper financially, what that plan is going to look like. How does that impact the value of my company? So those strategic decisions that you're making, where do they go? And there's, we'll, over the course of the program, we can talk about kind of the myriad of other reasons why, you know, an owner may need evaluation. But to hit on kind of your point of the obvious, yes, that's probably the most obvious that people then think about when I kind of explain what I do is the sale of a company. But there's a lot of other reasons to do valuation.
Well, I'll tell you, I personally really resonate with what you described because my business partner, Lee, and I, we have this media company, Business Radio X. And our story to our wives, both of whom have real jobs for some 12 years now, has been, look, Business Radio X is our we're the speculative stock in right. your portfolio.
Yep.
So one reason I'm coming up with is maybe just to give the working wives a report. See, honey, this thing really is worth something.
It's worth something. Absolutely. Well, you made it 12 years, so there's probably some value there somewhere.
Maybe something going, especially the more Lee and I can get out of the way and let some of these other studio partners do the work.
So hopefully you're rubbing more than two nickels together. So
so don't be offended, please, because I get the same type of question I'm about to ask when it comes to digital radio or podcasting. Why not? Why can't I not just do this myself?
And certainly you can. But many business owners we find – when you look at it, you know, they may not be equipped kind of in the accounting and financial realm to do it. You know, oftentimes it's, you do come across business owners, and this has happened frequently in my career, where they believe, and they may be right, that they have a really good feel for what their business is worth, but it's going to be more feel. You wind up with a lot of rules of thumb that occur in industry. So, frequently, you know, and maybe from just a high level to say, well, wow, the businesses in my space trade at 5x EBITDA, or, you know, some industries are revenue based, you know, at 1x, 2x revenue, whatever it is. That may help satisfy what you want, but the real answer, that could be different. You know, I'll give you an example that, where I've seen kind of the rules of thumb, I think in this last year really kind of play out, or I've found some, I'll say some conclusions that seem to go against the grain of the rules of thumb that are out there. So this past year, we had the opportunity to value close to 25 dental practices. And the rule of thumb for dental practices is 0.6 to 0.8 times revenue. And even all the dentists I work with, they were, you know, you raise your hand in a room and they all said, yeah, that's kind of the rule in the space that we operate with. But what I found, and we're actually kind of putting some of our data together, we're still finishing our work, but I think we're going to develop kind of a meaningful article about it that we're going to publish, is that many of our, the implied multiples. So we valued all these dental practices, and each one of them, now you can take their value and divide it by revenue or EBITDA. And I think we're going to find for the practices that engaged us to do their work, there certainly may be some in that 0.6 to 0.8, but I have a lot that are much higher than that. And so
now why would some of them be higher? Are they doing some things that are just positioning them to be? Yeah. Why?
Well, in this case, these dentists are all kind of a common client of another firm that, does, some consulting with them. And so they're very strategically focused on their growth. And so part of one of the exercises that we had for them is they needed to put together their 5-year plan kind of financially and put it down on paper. So again, a rule of thumb is just that. I mean, and it's easy to apply in this case. So if you had $1 million in revenue, and within the rule of thumb, if you were 0.8 times revenue, it'd say your business is worth $800,000. You know, but the real answer is to value a company, there's multiple methodologies and multiple generally accepted methodologies that we would use. And, one of those is discounted cash flow. So the concept, and this probably hopefully is a concept for business owners and your listeners, that, you know, it's really the concept of, think of the definition of value. Typically, it's not what's happened historically. Think about the prospectus you may read from your own broker advisor, you know, hey, you're the portfolio we're going to put you in may not perform the way that it has historically. And the definition of value to me is very simply the present value of future cash flows. So that is one of the primary methods we do want to look at really with any business. And with these dental practices, that's what we did. So now you get a 5-year forecast of earnings and cash flow, and then we present value that back. So we develop a discount rate, So what's the, so you can present value those cash flows back. Is that discount rate? And again, I'm just making up numbers, mm-hmm. but is that discount rate 13%, 17%, 20% for a business? That's where hiring an appraiser who's done this work and spent a lot of time in it. That's part of the art that we have very scientific ways to kind of in method or data that we pull, to extrapolate to develop a rate of return. But there's also then some judgment that goes into that. But so so that was one of the primary methods we used. And then we had all these transactions out there that we have access to in some databases of dental practices that have been sold. So now we can look at the values on those practices and look at their revenue and EBITDA and develop multiples. So their value divided by their revenue and EBITDA gives us a revenue and an EBITDA multiple. And we were able to then, you know, use those multiples to figure out, okay, for this subject dental practice that I'm looking at, what's the right multiple for it? So a lot of analysis goes into that, but that's kind of I didn't mean to get into the weeds, but that's kind of the way then that we valued those practices. And when you come up with the conclusion of value that we had for most of them, I don't think are going to have fallen within kind of the rule of thumb, so to speak. And so that's why you got to be careful with rules of thumb.
Yeah, I think so. And that's why you seek out someone with highly specialized knowledge and specific expertise. A couple of things surface for me as a layperson. I have a brother-in-law who is a dentist. Mm-hmm. I'll bet he's every bit of 8 or 10 years out from mm-hmm. exiting. But here again, I'm wondering if a couple of things. If there aren't some best practices, some disciplines in which he might start engaging now, maybe through this consulting firm you described mm-hmm. or from some other, that would position him to beat the rule of thumb.
Right.
Right? And so I could see that. And I can see that being a much more informed conversation if he looks at engaging like a Wyndham Brandon to come in and do that. And then the other piece of it was, as a dentist, if I were a dentist, I think I would find it very comforting, compelling to know that you guys have really carved out a niche and really know your stuff. You have a specific experience in that vertical.
Right.
So have you sort of gravitated to a handful of verticals like that, or how has that been for you in your career?
Not necessarily straight to verticals like that. You know, I would say in my career has been spent here in Atlanta, the 25 years that I've been doing valuation. So most of my career is mirrored probably mostly the Atlanta economy, other than I don't do a lot of financial institutions. But other than that, you know, so I'm not, you know, we do some, you know, light manufacturing, logistics, distribution, software. Kind of, you think about everything that the Atlanta economy is about in the Southeast. That's generally where I've been. So, mm-hmm. Certainly you can develop specialties, but if you think about evaluation project, you know, a lot of ours are maybe they're 6 to 8 weeks in duration. Again, when I've got a client, like I described earlier, that's using it as a scorecard, I see him annually to every year to every 2 years or so. But many clients, it's, you know, our work is transaction based. So it tends to be that they may see us once. Now, you know, the only thing I would say is, you know, you talked to going back real quick that I think is worth capturing for regarding your brother-in-law or anybody that may be listening that's thinking about as an owner, thinking about selling, or they've got a client that's thinking about selling. It's always better to do those things and enter into these thoughts of, whether it be appraisal or cleaning up your books, whatever that may be, earlier rather than later. Do it before rather than waiting till you're approached. And, you know, spend that time up front. If you really think that there's going to be an exit like that for you that involves an external transaction, to an outside party, you know, always try and be in front rather than behind waiting for the offer, because that can scare a buyer if the cleanup's kind of occurring or there's been no
parallel
cleanup,
to this buy-sell conversation.
Correct, yeah.
All right, so I got to know your backstory. How did you land here? I'm sure it wasn't a straight path. It almost never is, right?
Nah, it's, you know, 25 years is a long time. So I graduated from Georgia Tech here locally. went to work for KPMG, was hired into their audit staff after doing an internship. And I'd done another internship when I was in college with Amoco, both in Chicago at their world headquarters back before they were BP Amoco, but with Amoco in Chicago and in Atlanta. And I had a friend a guy that I became close with out of one of the Big Ten schools. And he went into corporate finance group at KPMG. And I said, well, that sounds kind of interesting. So after I had accepted my audit offer, they introduced me around and they said, hey, you know, work hard for 2 years, get your CPA on the audit side, and then we'll think about bringing you over to one of these consulting practices. And so I had graduated in June of 1994. And I think I was slated to start with KPMG in September, October timeframe. And I got a phone call in, I think it was July or so, that said, hey, the valuation practice is looking for somebody, and we gave them your name. And so this is well before, you know, any internet base of Monster or anything like that, or job boards. And, you know, people use traditional recruiters and, you know, the AJC and the Wall Street Journal. And so it's July. So they had already really and a lot of the big six firms at that time hired a lot of MBAs. So the hiring had already been done. So they went to the HR department and said, we're not really getting any responses out of the ads we've run. Do you know of anybody? And they go, know of anybody? There's this guy that's going to start an audit. So I tell the story that I really, other than my internship, I never started an audit, and I went straight into valuation. And so I've had a 25-plus year career now and just in the space. So kind of fortuitous. And, you know, when I talk to young people or even talk with my kids, you say, you know, there's got to be a right time that you have conversations like that. But if you think that there is something that you ever want to do, or even if you're within a company that you're with, you know, don't be afraid to have conversations. But there's obviously right ways and wrong ways to have those. But express your interest on what it is that you want to do. And so for me, it's worked out, I guess, so to speak. And I've now been with Wyndham Brannan for almost 2 years. It'll be January. We started our valuation practice in January of 18, and that's when they hired me and with a lot of water in between KPMG and some different places before coming to Wyndham Brannan. But so yeah, we've been doing this now for 2 years at Wyndham Brannan.
Well, your enthusiasm and your passion for the craft, I mean, it comes through. It really does. So what are you finding the most rewarding about the work? What do you enjoy the most?
I think it's I don't know that I've ever been asked that, but I think that, you know, I think it's trying to I don't want to sound proud, but, you know, kind of educating a buyer of our services, mm-hmm. you know, educating a client, you know. And I've had that many times where, again, we talked about it earlier, that they think they may know, you know, what their company's worth. And those folks, I got to probably walk a little more gingerly as I'm collecting data and doing things. But, you know, we're completely objective in our work. So the main thing is that, you know, for us, is we don't take a success fee. We work on an hourly basis, or really mostly it's a fixed fee arrangement, but it comes back to, you know, our hourly time. I mean, we're in a firm of professional practices, an accounting and auditing and advisory firm. So for me, it's I think just spending the time, and what I've enjoyed even in the last 2 years, and I think I'll continue to enjoy, is, you know, a lot of the CPA space tends to be a very pyramid based structure, in terms of, you know, when you know, so you, our clients sometimes, or clients of a CPA firm, you know, they may not spend as much time with a leader of a practice, but in this type of work, you know, it's probably a little bit more, I say, like a pipe. So, you know, we've got just kind of a straight up right. and down. We don't have a wide base of, you know, it's not like I've got 10 analysts working for me, and, you know, then it comes up to the top as a principal and leader in the group to do that. So I still have a lot of hands-on experience with the clients that I get to talk to and walk them through, you know, our transactions and what we're doing. And the best feedback you can get is that that I've found over the years, that they found it valuable. And just really the level of service. I enjoy the level of service. I enjoy meeting new people. So, you know, again, if you think about our practice, it just, we don't have you know, an annuity-based client base like our audit or tax groups would within our firm. You know, I maybe at the beginning of a fiscal year can tell you maybe where 10% of our revenue's coming from, and the rest just comes as we go. So developing new relationships is very rewarding as well, and spending time in the marketplace like that.
Well, I bet that is. Well, and let me ask that question. How does the whole sales and marketing thing work for a firm like yours? Because you don't just – you don't get on the phone and call people and say, would you like to explore some ideas around valuation? That's probably right. Not how it goes. Right?
No, it's all person to person. I mean, it's relationship based. So, mm-hmm. You know, now that I've been doing this 25 years, you know, so for me, in terms of how our work comes into the firm, you know, it comes in through the relationships that I have in the marketplace, typically with other advisors. Again, as I said, most business owners don't wake up and go, I got to call Tom Brooks today. I mean, they may if they've worked with me or somebody like me in the marketplace, right. But so it's going to be, you know, just relationships that you develop with other professional advisors that don't do valuation work that go, okay, I've got a client that's in this position, or internally at Wyndham Brannan, that's the key. So doing something like what I do at an accounting firm like that, it's important that and we do this very well, and my partners are great at it, is, you know, we have our own clients that have a need for valuation work. So, you know, I generate, in terms of our practice, our valuation practice, a lot of those opportunities are coming internally as well, because we've got clients that have the need. So, so it really is now just being present amongst my partners, helping them and helping their clients. And again, you talk about kind of the rewarding things. That is where you go, okay, we've got this client, we're already doing X, Y, and Z for them, and now we're going to do A, B, and C. And that's rewarding to be able to just come in, be part of that team, and execute, and you're in and you're out, and right. They're happy, and you know, it really solidifies our relationship with our clients in the firm.
So that right there internally, Wyndham Brannan, in tandem with teaming up with building relationships with best in class in these other disciplines, right, like estate attorneys and
yep.
Wealth advisors and those kind of folks, CPAs, that's an important part of your life, I guess, is
it is
those yep. relationships.
Yeah, it is, very much so. You know, you to do this, you really do have to have that is a big part of it. You know, and it takes a while to get there. You know, it's all about trust and
oh, the trust you must have right. to have between right. a guy who's managing my portfolio, and now he's saying, okay, Stone,
right.
It's time for you. I'm recommending that you and Lee sit down with Tom. I mean, this guy's really putting a lot of trust in you, and vice versa, right?
It is. Yeah. No, absolutely. It's, you know, that's where it, you know, again, one of the rewarding things is just that, because now you know that people are putting themselves out there for you on your behalf. And, mm-hmm. you know, and again, many of the folks that kind of refer us work or spend time calling and saying, Tom, hey, I've got this client with this need. You know, do you think you can help them? And, you know, I'm just an extension at that point of them. And,
right.
and if I mess that relationship up with the client, that's going to be the last time.
You're
that
done.
I probably won't be getting that phone call again from that kind of advisor
right.
or, you know, that individual to call back and say, hey, I've got another opportunity for you. So, like I said, that is part of the, you know, and I think I've always viewed it that way, is not only do I have the client that I need to satisfy, but there's an advisor as well that's probably sitting there with them that had the confidence in us. So I need to make sure that they're,
right.
you know, happy, and I'm getting their feedback along the way as well to understand, hey, was client ABC, A, B, or C happy with what we did and how we did it and the work that we did.
Well, I got to say, putting myself in the shoes of the client, I got to tell you, if my guy Max mm-hmm. said, yeah, Stone, you and Lee need to sit down with Tom, then, I mean, I would, knowing what you just, and I guess intellectually I knew it, but this is really bringing it home for me. I know that your relationship with Max is so important. You really are going to do everything.
Right.
No way Max would refer you. So that makes me feel better as a client. So let's walk through, if we could, just sort of the early stages of the process. Let's mm-hmm. say that occurred.
Yep.
Lee and I sit down with our CPA and Max, sort of on the wealth management side. Some combination, somehow we get referred into you. What are some of the early things that happen between you, me, and Lee? Lee and I own the network, the
right.
business radio. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So early on, it's going to be, you know, again, Max probably makes that phone call. you know, and then, you know, it's either he's still, sometimes advisors will want to kind of be in the middle and be the conduit and send information over. Usually that's not the case. I will say when we do have an attorney involved, sometimes the attorney will want us to engage them, or the attorney wants to engage us rather, so that we can maintain attorney-client privilege while we go through the process of working with their client. But let's just say, yeah, you guys are just thinking about selling, so we'll take the attorney out of it. But so, you know, it's going to be an early conversation with Max, and then he's probably more than likely going to say, hey, talk to Stone, talk to Lee, and, you know, get in touch with them. And then it's probably the first conversation is anywhere from, you know, it may be about 30 minutes, something like that. But I'm just going to ask questions about kind of where you've been, what you've done. I'm going to want to see, you know, typically we want to see 5 years of financial statements and tax returns just to kind of scope the project out and then understand your business, ask some questions, maybe some follow-up questions after we get those and review those to make sure that we understand the scope. And then within kind of from our valuation perspective, was there anything in the financials that we saw that we need to be aware of, that we need to think about, that kind of creates anything within the scope of our project that we have to account for? So an example of that might be, you know, we spoke, but you never brought up that, oh yeah, when we started this, you know, we had a bunch of outside investors and we gave them preferred A and B.
forgot to mention this, Tom. Yep.
And then that probably shows up in your financials, and that's why we want to look right at them, because now I've got to understand, you know, well, how does that preferred, those preferred shares work? If let's just say we're going to value common shares. So again, I'm throwing a wrinkle to it, but frequently right in your, you know, in a case like yours or many others, there isn't, that's not the case, but I just want to understand, you know, have you been profitable? You know, what does the growth pattern look like for your business? Tell me a little bit of the story, you know, how you started, where you got, so I can understand the background and think about, again, how that's going to impact the valuation. And then from there, it's, you know, once everybody's kind of, I'm satisfied that I've kind of scoped the project from my view correctly, I've answered your questions, then it becomes the, you know, okay, we'll write an engagement letter. And then, you know, lay out the scope within the engagement letter and the fees. And then usually then, you know, to be honest, and we can laugh about this, the fees are one of the first questions that comes up, you know, even.
Right.
And I think that that's where, you know, that's where.
Do you just address that head on, or do you have to, how do you handle a fee question?
Yeah, it varies. But typically I do try and get to the answer of what I think it's going to be even before a lot of people will ask. Because again, I think for many individuals that engage us, there's this perception, I'm going to send you my black box, whatever you want to call that, or even my shoebox of stuff, and you're going to put it in a model and out it's going to come. And that's not what we do. We're not just some spreadsheet jockeys.
You're not TurboTax.
Right. Yeah. We don't just input this stuff. Right. Don't ask any questions and we're done. You know, it's kind of iterative process in the sense of as we go, I'm assessing risk. I'm assessing, you know, I'm assessing the company as we're going through our process. So there's a lot of back and forth on questions, you know, once we're even engaged. So,
right,
you know, typically I've done this enough. And if it's a fairly standard type, you know, again, I'll call it more of a fairly standard type of engagement, or using your example that you guys are thinking about selling down the road. So to help us with evaluation, you know, I can usually probably tell you broadly, you know, hey, before looking at anything or based on what you've told me, and I'll usually put it in a range, and then I'll say, you know, hey, you know, but let me look at what I've asked for. And then I usually will either tighten it up to a point estimate or a smaller range than what I've kind of outlined. So,
but you can't, as professional services providers, and I would put our thing in that same bucket since, yep, the way we do media is a little different than some. If you can't duck the question, because sometimes they won't hear any of the rest of the conversation,
right,
if you don't address that fee question, no, in some way, right?
No, exactly. And so, yeah, that's why, again, I'm going to address it. But,
right,
but, you know, and then it's, you know, and then it just becomes managing. Sometimes, you know, every client's different. Some are, well, you know, in this case, I trust Max, and, you know, therefore I'm not going to, you know, may not have a lot of questions about the fees. And other people are, wow, I've got somebody that can do it for half or less, right, you know, way less than that. And so, you know, then it becomes, well,
Well, that's data too, because that may not be your client, right?
Right.
That might be the right guy.
Exactly. No, not every client's meant to be our client. It's okay. What I always say is it's okay to lose engagements, and it's okay to lose engagements sometimes over fees. You don't want to be
that's
to be
90%. You want to lose them on, right? If you're going to lose, let's lose it there.
Yeah. To me, if you're losing 90% of them on fees, then you've probably got a problem with your fee structure. But if you're told every once in a while that, wow, I really just want to spend less, then you're probably okay. You're probably in a good spot. And I'm always happy to potentially have a conversation around, adjusting fees to see if we can get there, but it's usually not that market, marketable a change. I mean, usually again, because we've done this and I've done this long enough that I've got a good feel for what it costs on our platform. And I think it's a very, our services are very competitive in the marketplace, but there are low cost providers out there. That's true of any business model there is. And so I can't necessarily go compete against that, but then I can try and compete on what we described. Your experience with us is going to be, should be outstanding. And when you're done, I wouldn't say it this way, but I have a pretty good feel that for the individuals that think it's very black box oriented and may get surprised on the fees up front, when they get to the end, they go, yeah, that was a lot. I've had some clients go, that was a lot more information that I needed to give you and expected to give you. Think about it like maybe the best way that I've thought to think about it is this as an owner, and use you're prepping to sell, but think about what a buyer is going to do to your company when they're coming in. If you've entered a letter of intent, they're going to have all kinds of advisors here scrubbing numbers, doing due diligence, not only financial, but legal, HR. It's going to be – so think of it from that perspective. And it is – I'm a hypothetical buyer. Usually our standard of value in most of our engagements is what we call fair market value, which is a hypothetical buyer and seller. There's more to the definition than that. But for now, we'll just focus on – so think of it this way. What I tell clients is think of me as a – as somebody that's like a buyer. So the questions I'm asking and the data that I'm asking for is no different than a buyer would ask you for. And to just say, send me this stuff and I'll run an Excel model and give you an answer, that's not – a lot of this becomes, going back to, many of your listeners that have been to business school – it's a SWOT analysis. I mean, that's part of what I do part of what I'm – while I'm doing our work is we're pulling together a SWOT analysis about the company. Every company that we look at is, we're thinking about it as an investment. So what for me is a potential – or not that I'm a potential buyer, but I'm stepping in the shoes of a buyer, and that's the kind of exercise that I'm going through as your provider of valuation services.
That's a very helpful frame for me as a layperson to see it that way. So thank you for that description. It occurs to me, and I don't know why it's occurring this late in the conversation, but one of the reasons I have a great deal of admiration for you and the work that you're doing, not only do you need to be an impeccable technician when it comes to the right questions and processing this information and delivering it and packaging it in such a way that I and my buyers and my stakeholders can all understand and make informative decisions on. But you got to have, what do they call it? EQ. I won't say therapist, but you got to be able to handle, because you might be telling me that there are parts of my baby that are not quite as pretty as I thought. There's that whole side of your work, right? Because some of these conversations, I assume, can get very sobering.
They can, and I've had those where, you get the surprise on – you can tell either on the other end of the line or if you're delivering, our draft. Typically what we'll do is we'll deliver a draft first because, again, while we're – we know the process. We know what we're doing in terms of valuation, but, that doesn't mean that I couldn't have missed something or misunderstood something and some data that we have. So all of our clients get to digest what we've given them. And to the extent they want to ask questions or have me walk them through what it is, because sometimes it does. They get I'll call it a deck of schedules, and it looks kind of like Greek to them, and they really don't. And they'll say, I don't really understand what's here. Can you walk me through what you've done? But I have had, with 25 years, there have been those, as you described, the sobering conversations for an owner. even within some of these 25 dental practices, you know, I've had some that have said, well, I think I'm going to come back next year. I was looking to do some equity, you know, some equity grants to some of my associate dentists, and the value's not where I thought it would be. Or, you know, you may have a dentist that's in a really small market, and now he's, you know, for him, it was, wow, I'm contemplating retirement. This isn't what I thought it might be. And that's, you know, it's hard on that end, but that doesn't mean that even over the next few years, if he continues to, you know, if he can change some things or grow, in this case, you know, his practice was not as profitable as some of the others, but it's also, he's in a small market. But so yeah, those conversations, I've had many of those over the years.
And better to get all this from you than a potential buyer, right? To get blindsided. Let's get it now, just like no different than the patient of the dentist. Look, you either have a cavity or you don't, but if you do, you need to know it.
So you're right. Some of that EQ or EIQ is, you know, not that I'm perfect at it. I probably need a woman's sixth sense to pick up on it better than a lot of us men do. But no, in seriousness, it really is a, you know, you do have to be able to read ultimately our client to see if they're in some way either upset or, you know, not necessarily angry. You know, but then it just takes some time to, okay, well, tell me where you think there's something wrong, you know, and it's not always necessarily wrong. Sometimes it's just, you know, but it can be. I've had that where I think that you're a little off, and it's, well, let's walk through it, you know, and let me present to you what we did. And I'm certainly open to, if I missed or misunderstood something in the process, then we can certainly look at some of the valuation inputs that I can look at to go, okay, yeah, that makes sense. You know, yeah, we did kind of misunderstand that, and we can now, you know, address that and make it right. But, you know, I've had the many people when you talk with them, whether it be the, you know, attorneys and CPAs, and although I just heard somebody speak at a conference recently, and they said, you really can't say you're a part-time psychologist, and this person was a psychologist, even though many of us, right? I mean, not that we fancy ourselves as that, but there's a lot of difficult conversations that have to happen. And again, going back to the business being more than likely, you know, an individual's primary asset. And if they've spent, in your case, I think you said 12 years.
Yeah.
Or now, if you've spent 30 years.
This is my baby.
If you spent 30 years, it is something you've got to understand that they're more than likely emotionally hooked in it as well. Right. So don't take everything, or even if you get what's perceived, or I might perceive as negative, most people might, or somebody might perceive as negative feedback. It's just they might be a little hurt too. So, right. So, you got to be cognizant of that every step of the way.
All right. Before we wrap, let's see if we can leave our listeners with some low hanging fruit, some things that they can begin thinking about, learning about, or possibly even doing to increase the valuation of their business, maybe even as a precursor to reaching out to somebody like you. Are there a few things that we could all just be thinking about or doing or learning? Or,
well, I think it gets back a lot to just, if those are thoughts that you're entertaining, to begin to, you know, to have those, to take those thoughts and talk with your advisors, that you may have, and begin to assess, you know, where and how. And then, you know, for evaluation like mine, I would say you're not necessarily thinking about it like selling, and like we talked about, cleaning everything up and, you know, thinking about it from that perspective, having, you know, all your legal documents tied down, everything in that side of the house, and then all your financial house in order in terms of having potentially audits or reviews if you're thinking about selling. But I think that if you are interested in thinking about, you know, hey, what is the value? It begins to just have those conversations. And it's something easily too that I'm happy to do, on the front end with individuals to understand, well, what is it that you're thinking? Why is it that you think you want to understand the value? And we do it a lot. I mean, so you use the example of an estate planning attorney, and we do a lot of work in the estate planning space. So Wyndham Brandon, we've got a very, large high net worth practice. And so I wind up doing, and there you are, you're looking at transferring business interests from first, second, or on to, you know, down the generation. Right. So we'll do that type of work. But what I wanted to kind of bring that around on is just that, you know, again, it's just a, but the management planning side of it, that's typically the other very large area where I've done a lot of my work over time. It's because it's the classic, well, I was thinking about selling and I got approached, but again, I think that the main thing is if that's even in your realm, do you want to think about having that valuation first so that you don't have to be surprised and scrambling when somebody potentially gives you an offer and they start putting time around it, around, oh, let's get to a letter of intent. I'm very interested. But so if you can have the, be educated yourself, I think that's the main thing, and just ask those questions. And, you know, frequently, you know, you're the advisors that, again, I'll presume that a valuation advisor is not seated at the table already, you know, with you or anybody else is, you know, you want to, I think, just begin to have those conversations. Hey, I'm thinking about this. You know, am I thinking about it right? And it, you know, again, you're just taking input from many professional advisors and then piecing together a plan that makes a lot of sense for you.
Fantastic. All right. So if our listeners would like to reach out, have a conversation with you or someone on your team, what is the best way? What are the coordinates, whether it's an email, a LinkedIn, a website, whatever you feel like is appropriate?
Yep. It's so email is easy. T Brooks, so TBROOKS at WyndhamBrannon.com. And then my direct dial at work is 678-510-2748.
Marvelous. Well, Tom, thank you so much for coming and visiting with us this morning. Thank you for sharing your story, man.
It was great. Thanks for your time, Stone.
All right. This is Stone Payton for our guest today, Tom Brooks with Wyndham Brannon, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next time on Atlanta Business Radio.